contact with volunteers in Asia was in many ways a continuation of IVS experience. Mm-hmm. Dwight Clark, who is the head of volunteers in Asia at Stanford, was good friends with Don Luce. They had set up, back in the mid-60s, some Voltern positions, actually, for Stanford students, undergrads, to go to Vietnam mm-hmm. and work as sort of assistants to IVS volunteers mm-hmm. out in the countryside. And then come back to finish their Stanford education or whatever. Some of them subsequently went back as full 2-year volunteers mm-hmm. In Vietnam. There was kind of a connection. I had met Dwight Clark here at Stanford when I was an undergraduate and did some service project things that he organized on spring breaks. Then I saw him again at the IVS house while I was up on the staff of IVS. Mm-hmm. And he was coming back from setting up the first VIA program in Indonesia.
The first?
VIA, Volunteers in Asia.
Asia program.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This was just shortly after all the attempted coup in Indonesia mm-hmm. and the massacres and all this stuff. And VIA, you know, this tiny little organization was the first organization allowed then, I believe, to have volunteers coming back in mm-hmm. to Indonesia. You know, Peace Corps out, all these things were out. Mm-hmm. And this tiny little organization operated out of the basement at Stanford, you know, placed a couple volunteers there in Indonesia. And so when Kathy and I were looking for a way to get out to Southeast Asia, we contacted Dwight, thinking that he might know of schools in Indonesia that might do a direct hire of us. You know, mm-hmm. We tried this route and various things. And Dwight said, "Well, you know, I think maybe the board here at Volunteers in Asia would be willing to consider you two as volunteers," which hadn't even crossed my mind as a possibility. Mm-hmm. We in fact went that route and got out to Indonesia and began an association that has continued up to the present in several different ways. Mm-hmm. Again, sort of a continuation of what starts early on mm-hmm. and very much a link to IVS. Mm-hmm. When I came back and was teaching here, one of the ideas for a project that Dwight had and that sounded interesting to me that we got into was publishing a newspaper on Southeast Asian affairs. Mm-hmm. At the time, it was virtually impossible to get news about Southeast Asia. America had mm-hmm. amnesia, willed amnesia about the whole area, and unless you could afford the Asian Wall Street Journal or Far Eastern Economic Review, you were out of touch. So on a total shoestring basis, we started putting out the Southeast Asia Record.
Wow.
You know, doing all the typesetting and the layout and the paste up and everything. Not generating material ourselves. We didn't have our own writers, but getting news from Phibus and from the Reuters news mix done for their Asian customers. And just have a place where it was available. And we started out as a weekly? Which was just a killer. There were only two of us basically working on this. And with some student help. And, you know, tough to get circulation. It was an exciting time, though, because this during this period is when the actual need for it was so clear. Mm-hmm. It was when the Khmer Rouge, what was happening in Cambodia was becoming so apparent, and when Vietnam attacked Cambodia, and when China attacked Vietnam, and a whole range of things. It's funny as I watch current events coming out of Asia and realize how many of them are spin-offs of stories that we ran and did. This was when close to 20 years ago, 18, 17, 15, 15 to 18 years ago. All this stuff about Kuala Lumpur's big plans for their high-tech valley. You know, I remember when we ran that story, and in either this or when we just couldn't sustain this at a weekly schedule. It was just insane. So we went then to a monthly called the Asia Record, where we expanded to include East Asia, China and Japan and Korea. And one of the neat features that we had there was translations from the Japanese press, which was really a neat, neat element. But that so that was an ongoing connection to Asia there for some time. One of the ways that we supported it too was to put together, I believe, the first Vietnamese language news broadcast in this area. We had a Vietnamese speaker who worked and would come in and do a 12-minute news broadcast with international news and local stuff that some of the college radio stations put on for free. So that was involvement with the Vietnamese community, again, sort of a spin-off. But very frustrating, because the Vietnamese community, of course, doesn't trust information that doesn't come from the precise ideological spectrum that they can pinpoint. So the fact that the guy doing the news wouldn't talk about the filthy communists temporarily in charge of Vietnam when doing a news story dealing with Vietnam, but would rather say Vietnam. that was problematic, but it was interesting for a time.
Well, I'd love you to do me a favor.
What's that?
I would love if you could send me a Xerox copy of this page. This in particular and this.
Okay.
These two. It's interesting you got a Mel Gertov article out of him. That was good. That's amazing.
Yeah, we got some.
Big Rand writer. And this Iranian Perils in Southeast Asia, I think, would be useful for teaching world history. As an, it's not a question of whether one agrees. It just ties the Iranian Revolution and the Vietnamese Revolution together. And I could use that in my class.
Oh, okay.
I'd love to use that.
Okay, sure.
But this is really impressive. This is. So how long had did this go on?
It went. Let's see. Total of about 3 years. Finally, I had to. I was getting paid zero by the end. We got someone else to sign on to basically do one more year as editor of it while I was doing some freelance typesetting and doing some other things to try and keep it going. And then it closed. So overall, it was about 3 years. And it was interesting. I mean, I met interesting people doing it. Graduate students who came over to help out, who later on, stayed involved in Asian affairs or went on in journalism and things like that.
By the way, this thing about Philippine priests being murdered, there's another movie. There's another film you might want to write down. It's called Por Apre Nobis, Pray for Us. I don't know how to say that in Latin or in Spanish. But it's a film. It's kind of very dramatic, almost melodramatic, about a priest that fought with the New People's Army and then with the new government. Marcos is thrown out of power and everything's supposed to be better, but the U.S. and other groups are still funding a counterinsurgency war in the Philippines. So people are still being disappeared and murdered, and supposedly, but Cory Aquino's in power, right? So these things aren't supposed to be happening, or they must really be bad. And how innocents are being massacred, but it all has to be covered up as a kind of they were communists, and it's a pretty dramatic film. If you like Indonesia, I mean the Philippines island Southeast Asia, it's interesting. It's another thing I had to watch at the East West Center. They have this incredible video library. When A couple of questions. Did you, as a head of the education mission, what was the view of IVS the whole time you were there generally, as well as when you were staff, about women in IVS? Because in education, there were a lot of women working in education.
Yeah, there were. Some really dedicated teachers that I recall were women. I'm trying to remember the name of one there in Saigon, who was there for years and years, Jeannie somebody. And I'm trying to remember, as far as leadership went, typically they were male roles. Mm-hmm. With certainly strong input from women. Mm-hmm. Remember Jackie Shagnon, when she, I'm trying to remember what position she had, but she certainly had an opinion and, mm-hmm. and was deeply involved in decision making. Mm-hmm. But largely, I would, if I were a woman, I think I would have proceeded as a men's organization in mm-hmm. large part.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes sense. I mean, early on, you have essentially, you know, you're taking these agricultural representatives and sending mm-hmm. them, but then they end up sending, in Laos, they actually sent married couples mm-hmm. for a long period of time. In Vietnam, it seems that they sent males or females to Vietnam without, as and treated them the same way. Mm-hmm. There didn't seem to be any special treatment one way or the other, but you just raised an issue, which is the leadership was almost exclusively male.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder what the origins of that were, or the underpinnings, or whether it's just coincidental. I mean, it's not like it's a giant organization. It's
right.
relatively small. But was there, do you know if there was an ever, associate chief of party who was a female?
I don't think so.
Hmm.
I don't think so.
That's interesting.
Of course, I'm also thinking just of the times. Mm-hmm. It was mm-hmm. still in that era when that was changing. Mm-hmm. You know, these all came together with the feminist mm-hmm. movement, right? I remember when I was in Vietnam, Kathy would send me things from Cambridge. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's starting in Cambridge and going elsewhere. So, you know, it certainly had spread across. I remember volunteers in Asia dealt with that issue shortly after we got back. Mm-hmm. And this was 75, 76 or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the women who had been volunteers with VIA pointing this out and saying, and making them take a look at it. Yeah, this is kind of a boys' club, and the leadership sat down there. And it just did, you know, a dramatic turnaround. Mm-hmm. But it took thinking about it, having somebody raise the question, mm-hmm. And going against something that just seemed automatic, mm-hmm. In a sense.
But the IVS operation closed down, may have closed down in Vietnam before those, there was a context
right.
in which to put that. But that's something to follow up, because I just finished mm-hmm. Interviewing some of the earliest women.
Mm.
And they did things that, as they reformed the IVS program from a woman's perspective, they changed kind of what existing ground rules were for them.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't an administrative reform. That is, they weren't demanding that the director of IBS be a woman or anything like that.
Right.
That was not part of it. And it just struck me because of those interviews that it would be interesting to ask and get some input as we do other interviews.
Yeah.
How that was viewed. But, you know, people will say, well, it was a war zone. The feminist movement hadn't started yet. You know, these expectations and what you call it, received wisdom of the way things are supposed to be mm-hmm. done.
What I would be interested to know mm-hmm. would be, at the same time, did the Friends Service Committee and the Unitarian Universalists, you know, mm-hmm. had they started the move yet towards kind of looking at such issues?
Lady Borton was just such a force.
Okay, yeah, okay, right, yeah.
I just think, and these again were small organizations that needed dedicated people, and if they happened to be women,
right,
you know, that would make an enormous difference. And That's certainly something worth exploring. I'll mm-hmm. have to talk to a lady about it. Mm-hmm. And I've asked people. You know, that's the problem. I'm so focused on IBS that a couple of times I've met, like John Schaefer, I didn't ask John if he knew Lady, but he would. I mean, if you were in Way, you would probably have met her.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Lady Borton, B-O-R-T-O-N, who's with the American Friends Service Committee.
Mm-hmm.
And has written a very lovely book recently, by the way,
okay.
called Sensing the Enemy. That's her old book. After Sorrow, she goes back and lives with villagers in North and South Vietnam and talks to them about the war.
I'd like to suggest follow up on the Friends Service Committee connection. I think that's a common theme to IVS and to volunteers in Asia as well, too. Again,
well, you've given us a context a few years later, women going out with volunteers in Asia are drawing attention to this issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very likely the same thing would have happened with IBS.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the response would have been very positive. I've never found, and I'm asking you this as more of a question, that when people complained about a sense of injustice or wrong, no matter how slow IBS was administratively in grinding around to deal with the issue, they always seemed to have done the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's definitely in its credit.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a point in Laos where Laos volunteers were in danger.
Mm.
And IVS responded very slowly.
Mm.
And some people wanted to play hardball over the issue, but they died. And I guess Richard Peters stepped in at that point and affected the needed changes.
Mm.
And that's encouraging about a bureaucracy, even one as small as that, that it had the capacity to.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your perception?
Yeah. Well, I remember the short period of time when I was in charge there in Saigon, when Hugh was gone.
Mm-hmm.
A.Z. Gardner, that was the name that I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Arthur Zindler Gardner.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, A.Z. came out, and there had been a meeting arranged with the AID education people. And A.Z. came out with the idea of pushing to pump up the numbers of English teachers, get this going. And I went into the same meeting with the idea of restraining the numbers, just arguing for the need and the advantage of pulling out of AID's grasp rather than pumping it up to kind of get absorbed farther back in and to become more of some grand and glorious plan to shoot English out to all corners of the age 11 to 15 market or something in Vietnam, which was absolutely absurd at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went in sort of to this meeting speaking at cross goals, but the upshot was that the program wasn't expanded, that this sort of, whatever was happening to IVS at that time, which was interesting, trying to spin off and become multinational, to become kind of responsive to the needs as you're seeing them in the situation, to be democratic in its decision-making processes, and, to keep that going. Of course, that spun out then to the end, to the point at which IVS was asked to leave the country, I believe.
Well, if Gardner had his way, then the argument would have been we're a big part of the war effort.
Yeah.
I mean, is that your perception, that had it expanded, it would have been a alien to the IVS mission? What do you think?
It would have been alien to the way I was feeling about things and many others as well. At that point, I think that the number of volunteers who were really having a feeling that, we can accomplish America's goals here was very, very small. I just remember feeling, as I'd read the Saigon papers and the criticisms, that the people who benefited the most from the American presence were out demonstrating, their young people were protesting, they were unhappy, they were dissatisfied. And think, this is with the people who are benefiting from your being here.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely crazy to think that this whole American program is ultimately going to be successful, or that you're going to get the whole country working along with you, mm-hmm. when you can't even get that small part of it that kind of logically has the most to gain from your continued involvement in this failed enterprise, mm-hmm. to make it a little easier for you to continue limping on from one year to the next. I mean, it was just falling apart. Mm-hmm. And so that was...
Well, you mentioned, in that context, you mentioned that, you know, having every 11th grader speaking English all over Vietnam, which was ridiculous at the time. Why was that ridiculous as an idea?
Well, that placing American volunteers out in, you know, small provincial high schools, mm-hmm. Was going to have a serious impact on Vietnam's ability to develop. It's a time to focus your limited resources, mm-hmm. on a place, especially when much of the teaching was just being a walking tape recorder kind of thing, you know, read and repeat, you know, forms of English instruction that were not efficient and were not effective.
Mm-hmm. What about the security issue to send all those people out there?
You know, I don't recall that as being the major concern. Yeah, I don't. You know, there were a lot of places still that you could have teachers and volunteers.
But you felt that
I just didn't think that trying to bring in a whole lot of people, and then the caliber of teachers that we could recruit, mm-hmm. was another question. You know, it's hard to recruit good people for a wartime situation, mm-hmm. in these circumstances. Mm-hmm. So also the balance between your core, or what had been the core, certainly, and to my mind still appropriately was the core, you know, the appropriate technology aspects and the community, mm-hmm. development aspects and the you know, rural development aspects, mm-hmm. and those sorts of things, you know, to overwhelm that with some big thing that was going to bring in more support from AID and more money and more volunteers and all that on the education end, would really have been disruptive.
Well, just as a devil's advocate, you know, given that there's the, you know, the war and given the history, and American changing American attitudes towards American involvement in Vietnam, wouldn't a massive education program? I mean, in Laos, that was all that was left. That is, they couldn't put people out in the countryside, mm. after a certain point. Mm-hmm. It was suicide for them, and it wasn't an effective way, given also that they just literally had to do what USAID was telling them. Mm. And that wasn't what IVS was for either, that pulling back into an educationist bulwark. That is, well, we know what we have this program, mm-hmm. and we have schools and we have people in place, and it's working. Mm-hmm. So why wouldn't, given the difficulties of doing CD, community development, under these circumstances, why wouldn't it logically be to retrench within the educationist role?
Well, you could do that, but then keep it small, you know, do it where you could be effective. Then, mm-hmm. then really look at the teacher training colleges or the, mm-hmm. universities and things like that, rather than just, you know, a guy up in Hoi An, the vice principal at school where I was teaching, mm-hmm. you know, said once, well, you know, could we make an analogy and say that you know, IVS is kind of like the lipstick that an ugly girl puts on her face, mm-hmm. to make herself appear more attractive, you know, as I'm talking about the relationship between IVS and AID and the American war. Mm-hmm. Yes, in large part. And the kind of thing that they were talking about, seemed to me to be, trying to put more lipstick on a pretty ugly face.
And in retrospect, you still feel that way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
See, now,
very interesting.
Via is involved in teaching English in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
See, the same, I've been back to Vietnam since.
And that was the next question I was going to ask you.
Oh, okay. Involvement with Vietnam since then. So teaching about it occasionally, talking with people. Being frustrated with this radio broadcast and then other things, at the extent to which Vietnamese who were just bound and determined not to have anything to do, not to acknowledge the current government in Vietnam, made it difficult to deal with Vietnam. Made it difficult to see this country's approach to it become more reasonable from my own perspective. Of course, everybody's got their own frustration.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was teaching English to Vietnamese down in San Jose. I got a semester job circulating around a bunch of schools, teaching Vietnamese elementary school kids mm-hmm. down there. And there was a teacher's aide who was Vietnamese adult. And I was talking about the difficulties that the boat people were facing, the ethnic Chinese leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he shared with the Vietnamese in Vietnam who were squeezing them out
mm-hmm.
was basically a good riddance, glad to see them gone kind of approach. So, okay, yeah, there we are there. And then the other thing, being absolutely dumbfounded when I was saying, well, I hope maybe we can get to a situation where there are normal relations between our government and Vietnam, mm-hmm. so people could move back and forth, and you could help your relatives and whatnot. And this guy was absolutely opposed. No, we don't want normal relations to happen mm-hmm. with Vietnam. Not until that government falls. And that just has a constant theme around this area and others has, been a frustration.
Mm-hmm.
When volunteers in Asia was invited to send teachers to Vietnam when it started opening up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know when it was, late 80s or something, I guess. I think Yale and VIA were the first two groups to send any teachers back.
Mm-hmm.
In small numbers, non-threatening. If you don't like it, we're out of there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that VIA has.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're only there because people want us there.
Mm-hmm.
But a number of the places that they went back to teach in, it was kind of like reigniting flames or anyway places that IVS had been before.
Mm-hmm. Did it make it easier, you think, for volunteers in Asia to do that?
Well, I don't know if directly it did mm-hmm. or not, if the people in place there. But there's some sense in which kind of going back in time, and maybe if maybe it's only in Via's institutional memory and Dwight Clark's and others, going back to Don Luce and whatnot, that the interchange of ideas and perceptions, and I'm sure in some contexts, people and experience, has been helpful. So Via's still involved teaching in Vietnam and in China and Indonesia and Laos.
Mm-hmm.
When they sent volunteers to Laos, all of a sudden we're and this took a lot of negotiating to get done, just because mm-hmm. things don't happen quickly and directly in Laos.
Mm-hmm.
But what's the school? K9, K10? There's a...
K7 or whatever.
K7, suddenly the normal school.
Yeah. Right.
See, IVS, I think, had a really important role there. Mm-hmm. Things were concentrated in that school.
Don Duck.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Now that's again the or still the premier, I think, teaching or teacher training establishment for Laos, isn't it?
Technic. No, there was there was a school. Yeah.
That's
where the last IVSers were working.
And Via has some as volunteers there again, mm-hmm. two or three or something like that. So I kind of look on it as a continuation mm-hmm. of what IVS did out there. Well, IVS itself is mm-hmm. of course no longer there, except Don's AIDS
program.
Mm-hmm.
And do you think that the VIA approach, of course the VIA approach is very small, and we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
I mean IVS would, even at smallest, was having 20, where VIAs would be sending two or three or something
and
like
they might have a group as large at any time as, mm-hmm. as maybe 10.
Mm-hmm.
Well, VIA had an impact too. I mentioned that we'd been back in 1992.
Mm-hmm.
VIA and the Bay Area Global Education Program, based here at Stanford, mm-hmm. organized a teacher's tour okay. to Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Real quick one of only about 10 days or so. To Hanoi, and then coming down to Hue and Da Nang and Saigon.
Mm-hmm.
I did that. I'd been away from things Vietnamese for some time, but mm-hmm. was excited to do this, and didn't lead that tour. For me, it was kind of getting over kind of the emotional mm-hmm. things and resolving loose ends.
Okay.
I think that going to a place like that with so much kind of emotional baggage left over, if you're at the same time trying to look after the needs of a group that you're guiding and directing through,
mm-hmm.
It would be really rough.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that, and then the following year, I put together and led from this side another teacher tour. Of about a dozen teachers who went to Vietnam for 3 weeks this time and had just a spectacular experience.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing the North, being in North Vietnam, was just so exciting for me and for the others too. And working down and for teachers, several from San Jose who have a lot of Vietnamese kids in their classes to have a chance to see the country. That their kids are coming from,
mm-hmm.
I think was enormously helpful. Now, it's not routine, I don't think, but there are so many ways that people are getting to Vietnam. It's really a breakthrough. But there in 1992, 93, there was still fear and opposition among Vietnamese to somebody going over, Vietnamese
mm-hmm.
going over
mm-hmm.
Openly to visit the country.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my feeling now is that that's their problem and no longer mine,
mm-hmm.
which is nice to be at in a way.
Are you active at all with IBS today?
I contribute each year. I have an enormous amount of gratitude to the role that IVS played for me at the time, and then also the learning opportunity that it extended, and the chances for involvement and a sense of important work, as opposed to work just for making money, which I think is an idea that it did develop. And still had. It was exciting being around people who were really into what they were doing,
mm-hmm.
which often was running counter to where they would be getting more money or more security or
mm-hmm.
whatever it was. So I'm still there. I'm on the mailing list for the Alumni Association.
Even if you don't answer the things that they send you. Well, I thank you very much. This has been a delightful time. And I'm sure we'll think of something later down the road that we want to get back to you on.
Okay.
But thank you.
Well, thanks.
Yeah.
For a minute.
We were just talking generally about IVF's mission here for a second. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I just think it's a classic situation of where you get a mismatch between funding source and, mm-hmm. and program on the ground. Mm-hmm. And I think it happens with foundations quite often and all kinds of things, but eventually the strain just gets to a point. You know, it would be as if somebody's goal really of raising funds for a missionary organization is to go out and save souls, you know, evangelizing. And yet the people who are on the ground, you start out with a bunch of people who are really gung-ho evangelists, but they find that what they've got to do is, you know, be planting sweet potatoes, to take something coming out of Vietnam, in a sense. And they really don't feel that evangelizing is relevant or important or significant. Mm-hmm. What's important is getting people to have a better life. Well, eventually, the strains of, you know, raising money on the grounds that you're going to turn this place into a, you know, a Christian spot, mm-hmm. and the folks on the ground saying, I don't care if they're Christian or not, you know, I'm going to improve their lives. Mm-hmm. It eventually breaks down. I think that's what it was going to happen at some point between AID and IVS. Mm-hmm. And the details of how it happened are much more interesting than saying, well, it was bound to happen. Mm-hmm. But I think the fact is that it was bound to happen at some point.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was nice talking to Scott, because there are only a few people who. There were a lot there because the mission became smaller. Mm-hmm. There are fewer people there to talk about what happened to IBS at the very end.
Right.
And Scott was saying that he thought, especially from his perspective of being on the board later, that everyone did every single thing possible, both within the South Vietnamese government and within IBS, to save the program. Mm-hmm. But that AID was determined to get rid of it.
Uh-huh.
And there wasn't anything that could be done. So their perception that gap. Mm-hmm. had become bigger was the perception that mattered mm-hmm. at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And what's funny is that in Laos, since it'll be interesting as to why that didn't happen in Laos, maybe because the mission there was smaller,
mm-hmm.
or maybe because it was Laos. But what ended the IBS program there was ultimately the Laotian government just not wanting any international organizations there
mm-hmm.
and closing down the program. But it wasn't closed down because USAID ordered it, and that'll be interesting to explore for a variety of reasons. One is USAID controlled the IBS mission in the sense that nothing could happen in Laos without the USAID,
mm-hmm.
because there was no national infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
so everything had to come from there. And maybe they didn't. And since so many of the IBSers had gone on to USAID Laos. And respected the IVS mission, and as long as that mission didn't interface with a war effort,
mm-hmm.
It was irrelevant then, rather than an enemy. And that, boy, that's going to be something to think about. Because
mm-hmm.
USAID tried to use them as pacification people,
hmm.
and then as refugee resettlement people. And they functioned well as refugee resettlement people. They were killed as forward advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that part had to be stopped.
Mm-hmm.
But that's like, hey, we tried it, it didn't work well, okay.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean there's an antagonism.
Right.
And it's going to be interesting to see if we can find USAID officials, contemporaries,
mm-hmm.
who can explain why they shut down the program in Vietnam and why nothing happened in regard to Laos, you know, why they didn't do it in regard to Laos.
Yeah.
And I haven't thought of that until just now. It's probably some very irrelevant, simple reason. Vietnam was the what do you call it, the thing on the horizon.
Right.
People in the United States weren't screaming for an end to the war in Laos.
Yeah, and just the media activities of former IBS volunteers. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there were a lot of them involved in a whole lot of ways. You know,
oh, yes.
Dick Berliner and what was the news agency that they were...
The Dispatch?
You know, Dispatch...
Uh-huh.
And then the what they call, what did Don Luce and the others call it?
Oh, the Indochina Research Project.
Remember, you know, Graham Martin saying, well, You know, we lost the war because of Don Luce. Because of Don Luce.
He named him. And Fred Branfman lost the war in Laos. Blowing the whistle on the
secret bombing.
On the secret bombing. Right. And Fred's very proud of that.
Yes.
He's very proud of that. He's not, everyone has a layer of maturity.
Yeah.
You know, and even the USAID people I know who work with Fred, who hated his guts, just think he was just a kid and it was a hot time. Well, we have some visitors and we're done. Right. Well, thank you very much.
Good time.